federal nurse staffing laws, more pediatric heparin errors, barcode reader problems, and acetaminophen overdoses. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take a moment and thank all of you for joining us here on The Nursing Show today. I will be talking a little bit more about our different topic areas later on, but first of all, I want to welcome all of the brand new listeners to the show. I know a lot of you have been sharing The Nursing Show with your friends and colleagues, and that's shown in the results and subscriber increases I've been seeing. So I want to remind all of you to head over to nursingshow.com for links in the show notes to everything I talk about in each episode, as well as other articles, news items, and reviews that I post there periodically throughout the course of the week, plus a lot of other links to other resources you will find there at the Nursing Show site. And all of that can be found at nursingshow.com. If you want to get in touch with me, sending in any suggestions, comments, corrections, links to news articles, or research, go ahead and do so by sending me an email at comments@nursingshow.com, and I'll get back in touch with you and let you know what I think. If you'd like to contribute something to The Nursing Show, either an article written for The Nursing Show blog, or would like to contribute a comment, suggestion, or even a correction on something presented here on the show, you can get in contact with me and the rest of the folks here at The Nursing Show by sending me an email at comments@nursingshow.com, and we'll get back and address the issues right away. I always try to return every single email I get, so you want to make sure you send emails in here to the show, and we can share some of that information with the listeners. Time now to look at the nursing news this week, and I thought I'd lead off with a story that's looking at some of the things going on regarding nurse staffing and nurse staffing laws at the federal government level. I found an article over at Medical News Today this past week talking about the American Nurses Association's recent visit to the Congress and their push for nurse staffing legislation at the federal level. Now, what's different about this particular nurse staffing initiative is that, unlike the other initiatives that are out there, such as the California initiative that actually codifies the minimum levels of staffing for a given unit or type of unit, the legislation proposed by the ANA in the federal government is simply that hospitals must come up with a minimum staffing level for their hospital. Basically, what they are looking at doing in this is to propose that hospitals will be accountable for developing valid, reliable, unit-by-unit nurse staffing plans. And these plans would be developed in coordination with the direct care of registered nurses and based on each unit's unique characteristics and needs. And this is the Registered Nurse Safe Staffing Act. It's the Senate Bill 73, House Resolution 4138. You can look up that information if you'd like to. You can also visit the American Nurses Association site on this issue called SafeStaffingSavesLives.org. So you can check out that link, and you'll be able to find out more information about this particular initiative and probably some good resources there for you to use in your own research for the local or state level nurse staffing initiatives that you may be involved with. Certainly something to keep in track of, and I think something that we all are very much worried about and concerned about as we deal with some of the issues involved with not having enough nurses to go around and trying to care for way too many patients at one time. And this happens no matter what facility you work in. You can get overloaded very quickly when you're short-staffed and additional patients begin to arrive on your unit. Of course, one of the biggest issues that we focus on, and certainly the Joint Commission and our hospitals focus on, is the issue of patient medication errors. It's one of those things that is, I don't know, not a deep, dark secret, because it's certainly being publicized well enough, but something that we all dread happening. We've all probably dealt with one or more times in the course of our careers. And it is something that I think nurse staffing is something that can really help out with. I mean, when you get overloaded and you're behind and you're trying to get patients medicated in a timely fashion, you begin to become rushed and you have to get the job done as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And unfortunately, that sometimes means that mistakes get made. This is primarily presented this week in two news stories I found. One of them has to do with medication errors in a Corpus Christi hospital where 14 newborns received overdoses of heparin. Yeah, heparin's back in the news again. However, this time it doesn't appear to be directly related to nurse staffing, but more likely this problem stemmed in this particular case from a problem in the reformulation of the heparin concentration in the pharmacy at the hospital. They were repackaging and reformulating the heparin in a different concentration, and this is what was sent to the floor and then administered to the infants. However, nurse staffing does play a role here because this was picked up on by nurses and physicians when they started noticing changes in lab results. And, you know, one of the things that you're supposed to be doing is checking some lab results for some medications to make sure that it's safe to administer those meds. And again, the more hurried you are, the more likely it is you're going to start skipping steps in an effort to get the job done. And this is one of those steps that wasn't apparently skipped, or at least eventually was caught in this particular case. And when the lab results came back and seemed skewed in some of the infants, they went and found that in fact, the concentration formulation that was being sent up from the pharmacy was incorrect and labeled incorrectly, consequently, so they were being administered the incorrect dose for their IV flushes and other administrations. So this is one case where medication errors didn't happen because nurses made the mistake, but clearly nurses were involved in catching the error and were all obviously involved in following up with treatment and observation and assessment of further side effects down the road once the error was discovered. Finally, since we're on the topic of medication errors, I thought I would relay to you a story I found from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine's study on the use of barcode medication administration technology. You know, these have been presented to us in the field as the holy grail for solving medication administration problems. You scan your patient barcode, you scan your medication barcode, it automatically checks the computer system, and if there's an error in what you've scanned, it will ding and tell you, and bells and whistles will go off, and you won't administer the wrong medication. So, great idea in concept. However, this study, which is the first of its kind to look at the effectiveness in actual use of barcode technology, found that there are numerous problems with the implementation of this technology. Not the least of which is some of the hoops that nurses need to jump through to get the technology to work correctly, whether it's trying to provide workarounds in an effort to save time, trying to provide workarounds because the barcodes on the medicine or the barcodes on the patient are missing or unreadable for one reason or another. These are all things that cause a lot of issues and still underline the need for having an actual human pair of eyes double checking doses and administration levels, and not just relying on a piece of technology to do the job for you. And that's what this study in particular found. This study was recently published in a recent issue of the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association, and the study found some interesting problems with the scanning systems and use of these barcode management programs, including the fact that in 4.2% of the patients that they reviewed, nurses scanned or used a workaround or override code to use the patient's ID bracelet, and in 10.3 of the medications they overrode or somehow used a workaround when dealing with medication barcodes that were unreadable. Now, this was caused by a variety of problems, including loss of wireless signal, which meant you lost connection with the computer to actually make sure the barcode was correct and matched up. Patients' barcodes or medication barcodes were unreadable or missing. Some medication barcodes were incorrect and had to be hand-charted or hand-typed in from another record, which of course bypasses the barcode. You can put in the wrong numbers. Also, some nurses, in an effort to save time, were carrying around barcode labels for patients in their care on the clipboard or patient care in the for the patient for the different medications. They'd actually have barcodes there to scan. And of course, it would be easy to scan the wrong medication and then give something else. And of course, another problem was the fact that some medications and their containers were in remote locations, either in a refrigerator or in some kind of a lockdown for narcotics and other restricted meds. And you'd have to scan the patient's ID, then go scan the barcode in the box, withdraw the appropriate dosage from the container, and then go back and administer it to the patient. And there was enough lapse of time to cause some breakdowns in the system where the handheld device would time out, or the signal would be lost, and again, you'd have to start over again. And all of these things actually required more time to check than an actual visual check of the medications by a nurse who wasn't feeling too rushed could get the job done. There's a lot more information presented in the article I've linked to, as well as the journal report from the study itself. So I urge you to follow up on the links in the show notes and check out some of this information. It might be something you'd want to provide to the administrators in your facility and offer them some suggestions on how to fix it. Time now for another visit from our good friend Lisa Booz over at Maryland Poison Control. And Lisa is joining us and is providing us with information on acetaminophen overdoses. It's present in not just pain relievers, but in a lot of other over-the-counter medications. And this drug, while not causing a lot of initial side effects, can be extremely toxic and cause liver failure in high doses. So it's really important to identify this overdose early. Let's hear what Lisa has to say. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm back again here with another segment of the Toxicology Minute. And I have Lisa Booz here from Maryland Poison Control on the line again. Lisa, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'm really waiting to hear what you have for us again this month. You always have such good information.
Well, what I'd like to bring to your listeners' attention this month is acetaminophen. Acetaminophen is a very, very commonly found analgesic. It's in pretty much every home in the United States. And calls to poison centers reflect that. It's the most common substance that's involved in poisonings other than alcohol. Analgesics or painkillers is the top substance or top group of substances, and acetaminophen is the top substance within that group. It's found in more than 600 over-the-counter and prescription products. It's found in analgesic products. It's also found in cough and cold products. Some of the more common brand names that you might be familiar with are Tylenol, Vicodin, and Percocet, and that's just a few. There are many, many, many more brands that are out there. The products can be found in tablets, they can be capsules, they can be liquids, they can be in adult formulations, or they can be in children's formulations. And in 2006, there were more than 142,000 cases of acetaminophen overdoses reported to poison centers, and more than half of those cases were treated in healthcare facilities. Now, overdoses with acetaminophen often occur in small children, and usually they're in unintentional overdoses. These products are given to children for fever or for pain or for colds, and often they're left out where the child can reach them. They are in flavors that are the children like these flavors. They're appealing to children. They're bright colors, and so that draws the interest of the child to the product. Occasionally, not very often, but occasionally parents and caretakers will, by mistake, give too high doses to children, or they may give adult products to small children instead of the products that are intended to be given to children. So there might be some chronic overdoses related to those reasons. Adults frequently overdose on acetaminophen intentionally in suicide attempts because it is so available. It is in pretty much every home. Unintentional overdoses occur, though, as well. And usually it's when teens and adults take higher doses than recommended, or sometimes they'll take more than one product that contains acetaminophen. They don't realize it. They don't read the labels, and they're overdosing themselves because of taking multiple products. Studies recently have shown that the number of unintentional acetaminophen overdoses in adults that lead to liver damage or liver transplants even have increased significantly over the last 10 years. As far as toxic doses, in a child, the toxic dose is more than 200 milligrams per kilogram as a one-time dose, or more than 100 to 200 milligrams per kilogram per day in divided or multiple doses. The good news is, children rarely become toxic because they metabolize the drug differently than adults, and they also usually ingest or swallow products that are intended for children. Those products are in low dosages, and by law, even, they're packaged in small quantities. So if a child ingests maybe a whole bottle of children's tablets or children's liquid, they're usually pretty safe or might develop just some mild symptoms. Adults need to take at least 10 grams at once in an acute overdose to be toxic, and that's equivalent to about 20 extra strength Tylenol. In chronic overdoses, they need to take somewhere in the order of about 4 to 10 grams per day for at least 2 days. If the patient is an alcoholic, is malnourished, or if they use certain other drugs that might affect how the acetaminophen is metabolized, then they might be more susceptible to the toxic effects and become toxic at lower amounts, around the 4 gram per day amount. Acetaminophen is rapidly absorbed out of the stomach, and it's metabolized to a toxic compound that your body normally can get rid of without it producing any toxicity. In overdoses, though, this metabolite is available to bind to cells, mainly in the liver, so it causes cell death and ultimately liver damage. Because it takes time for the drug to be metabolized and it takes time for this metabolite to be formed, you really don't see much in the way of symptoms for at least 24 hours later. Sometimes patients might complain of a little bit of nausea and vomiting within that first 24-hour period, but often really no symptoms at all. And then from 1 to 4 days later, you start to see the symptoms of the liver toxicity. They'll often complain of right upper quadrant pain because the liver becomes enlarged and tender. And then the symptoms progress over the next few days. They become jaundiced. They're hypoglycemic. They might have some bleeding from coagulation dysfunction. They develop a metabolic acidosis. They can become lethargic or even go into a coma, and even kidney failure in some cases. If the patient is going to die from the overdose, death usually occurs somewhere around 3 to 5 days after the ingestion. But most patients survive and do well if they're seen early on in the course, or if they come in early so that the antidote that's available for this overdose can be started soon after the ingestion and before much of the liver damage has developed. When you're confronted with a possible overdose, it's important to get a complete history from the patient on what and how much was taken. Some people will confuse acetaminophen with other over-the-counter analgesics. So they might tell you, for example, that they've taken aspirin or that they've taken ibuprofen, when in reality they've taken acetaminophen, and that's pretty common. We catch that quite a bit. Sometimes they just won't mention at all that they've taken acetaminophen or anything like that. They just kind of forget to tell you that, or they don't tell you that on purpose. Since the symptoms are usually delayed and since it's such a common ingestion, we really do advise to ask all patients who have overdosed intentionally whether they've taken a product with acetaminophen, whether they've taken an analgesic or a cough and cold product, specifically ask about that. Once the patient gets to the hospital, we always recommend that a blood level for acetaminophen is done on every intentional overdose, again, to rule out the fact that they might have taken acetaminophen. It's important to keep in mind that there are many products with acetaminophen that have other medicines in them as well, so they may actually have fairly severe symptoms initially, but it would be due to the other ingredients. For example, Percocet also contains an opioid. Tylenol PM also contains diphenhydramine, so you might see symptoms from that. And cough and cold medicines also contain a variety of things like antihistamines and decongestants that produce symptoms early on. Pre-hospital treatment consists mainly of supportive care if that's required. Activated charcoal should be given if the ingestion's been usually within the past few hours and the patient is awake and alert. There is an antidote. It's called acetylcysteine, and it's given either orally or given IV in a healthcare facility to patients who present with toxic acetaminophen blood levels, or if they even present with elevated liver function tests, then we'll usually treat them with the antidote just to be sure, you know, just in case that liver dysfunction is due to acetaminophen overdose or poisoning. The antidote is extremely effective in limiting the toxicity if it's given within the first 8 to 10 hours after the overdose. So that's the dilemma we run into. Many patients don't call the poison center, or they don't call 911, or they don't go to the hospital until they start feeling sick, which might be 24 hours later or longer. And by that time, the antidote still is given and still might have some effectiveness, but it certainly is nowhere near as effective as when it's given early on in the ingestion. As in any overdose, any type of poisoning or overdose, we recommend that you call your local poison center at 800-222-1222, and the poison specialist will then help you assess the overdose based on the product that was taken, the amount that was taken, and any signs and symptoms that have occurred. And we might recommend some management, such as activated charcoal, or even just tell you what to look out for en route to the hospital. Once the patient's at the hospital, we're usually pretty involved with making sure that the patient is treated appropriately with the antidote, given the right dose, and monitored in the right way over the course of therapy, which might be several days.
Great, Lisa. That's a lot of good information, and it's something that I've seen occur both in my experience in the emergency department and in the field, seeing patients that have taken large levels of Tylenol or acetaminophen or products containing that particular medication. So I think something that we need to keep in the back of our mind. And again, it comes back to taking a really good history and finding out those important facts. When did they take it? How much did they take? And get that information and have it available.
That's right. That is the key. And particularly with acetaminophen, again, it's a delayed presentation. And so it is very important to specifically ask about acetaminophen.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. We'll have you on another episode next month.
Thanks, and I'll be talking to you soon.
You can find out more for yourself by calling your own local poison control center. Again, that number is 1-800-222-1222. And you can also find out more about Lisa Booz and subscribe for the email version of the Tox Tidbit over at Maryland Poison Control's website at mdpoison.com. Thanks, Lisa, for that, and we'll look forward to hearing from her again next month. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show and remind you to get back in touch with me with your comments and suggestions on this or any other episode by sending me your emails to comments@nursingshow.com. And I will be happy to get back in touch with you and perhaps feature some of those comments here on The Nursing Show site. If you haven't done so recently, make sure to head over and check out the Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com. You'll find the show notes for each and every episode of the Nursing Show, as well as other links, articles, and news items posted there throughout the course of each week. I'm going to close out the show, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music for you. This is a song we've played before from the artist Johanna Staley, and this is her song, I'm Not Perfect. I hope you enjoy it, and make sure you let Johanna know you heard her song here on The Nursing Show. Well, that's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again with another episode of The Nursing Show soon. Until then, I want to remind all of you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Take that, I take it back. You can hold me down, but I can't relax. I misread you, and start it all again. Here I come, on the run. I went too far, now look what I've done. I want to save the world, but I can't save myself, 'cause I'm not perfect.
to show her how.